This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Final six in the evening, and you are with Lynn and Kelvin. So first up on Pop It, Pop It, we're looking at the future of mindfulness. Now, of course, mindfulness has been quite the buzzword for the last few years now, touted as a cure for just about anything. But we wanted to look at, I suppose, the legitimacy of it as an industry, potentially in medical use. And this is coming after an article in the New York Times about how the medical field is looking more seriously into the effects and benefits from mindfulness.
Yep, so the US National Library of Medicine recorded over 7,000 studies that were published last year that had the word mindfulness in it. And it seems like the medical field and academia in the US is trying to add just a bit of science into what Western marketers have traditionally co-opted lately to sell yoga leggings and all the way to Ford Explorers.
Yeah, anything basically. So the idea here is that it's starting to really give some legitimacy to mindfulness as a form of treatment for, you know, really things ranging from depression to chronic pain and quitting smoking. But results from research papers have been mixed. And that's, of course, because there really is no standard way of practicing mindfulness. There isn't a standard dosage that you can take and then ta-da, you're cured. There are different methods of practicing it. So all these things, I think, contribute to it being a little bit difficult to quantify. But I think it's also kind of interesting that we've moved from it being something that people practiced for themselves, to it being a marketing buzzword, and now to it becoming an entire industry. Because I think that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing that there is a whole movement and there is a whole ecosystem being built around the practice of mindfulness. And I'm curious to know where that will lead, because you also see people like, I suppose, Gwyneth Paltrow, kind of co-opting it for the sake of capitalism.
Yeah. Well, in general, we are seeing sort of more health-related, more wellness-related fields of practice becoming things that you can market, right? We're seeing this in, now mindfulness, but also we've seen a lot of movements in sleep. We have sleep trackers that are paid for. We have apps to track our sleep. We also have different companies that sort of sell out mattresses and all that too. And you know, laced with a lot of science behind them, right? They say this is the best mattress you can use to get a full night's sleep. Weighted blankets exist now. Not that they didn't exist in the past, but they're gaining sort of popularity. So we're seeing this sort of health, wellness-based marketing, product-based things sort of taking off at the moment, because I think we're sort of heading in a place where rest has become a sort of a luxury at this point in time.
So we, I guess, want to know whether you practice mindfulness in your daily life, and also whether you would take it that step further and go for something like a workshop in order to enhance it. Because like I said, entire ecosystems, entire products being built around this notion of mindfulness. So how are you participating in the mindfulness economy, really, is the question here, I guess. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
And as always, this being Pop It, we wanted to find out what the public thought about this. So here's what they said when asked if they practice mindfulness.
So I've been through a meditation class, but you know, I overthink a lot. So while I do my meditation, I think about what needs to be done today or tomorrow. So I think it's difficult for me.
I don't. Main reason is because, one, I don't know how to. Second is, since I was small, I never been taught to do mindfulness, to do meditation.
I go to yoga classes and sound healing classes when I feel like I'm like on the edge, so I do that.
My way of being mindful is when I do my makeup in the morning. That's all I do, and I really focus on like getting things like symmetrical or getting the right color. Just trying to take that moment of the day to really reflect on one action at a time.
We then asked them whether or not mindfulness is something that should be prescribed by doctors.
I believe that medication as a whole also should come around with mindfulness and like mental health as well. So yes.
I guess no, because doctors can introduce meditation and mindfulness at the same time. But it doesn't mean that it has to be prescribed by doctors.
I don't think it's something that you should prescribe. I think that people should explore and find out what kind of mindfulness suits them the best and how they can implement it into their lives by themselves.
Right, and on, I guess, a more personal basis, if they would appreciate that prescription.
My doctor just prescribes me antibiotics whenever I'm sick, so no, I don't think he has a very good advice to begin with.
I would say no, because medication that doctors practice or doctors learn is totally separate from the holistic mindfulness.
Yes, it would be great. It would be something different. It would be something natural.
Not really, unless there's like some sort of scientific proof or like steps it could actually roll out. But for now, not really.
So we're talking today about the practice of mindfulness and how there is an entire economy and ecosystem being built around that phrase. We see workshops, we see practitioners, we see brands capitalizing on it. So let us know what you think. Again, you can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, joining us on the line is our very own Noelle Lim, BFM presenter and producer, who took a teacher training course last year at the University of Oxford's Mindfulness Centre and has actually been running mindfulness workshops ever since. Noelle, always good to have you with us. So have you always been a believer in practicing mindfulness, and what first got you onto it?
I've always been a believer since a child. My mother exposed me to classes in meditation and mindfulness. But being a child, I wasn't taking all that very seriously. But I can see that it really helped my mother improve. I mean, like mentally and so forth. So, but as a practitioner, I really took it more seriously in 2018 because the past few years were really quite stressful, at least in my mind. So one day I woke up and I thought, why not just check out mindfulness? It's kind of strange. I cannot really explain it, but the word just popped up in my mind. So I signed up for a course on Coursera, and then I subsequently signed up for the 8-week MBSR course by University of Massachusetts. And it's an online live course because MBSR is like famous, right? They were the ones who pioneered using mindfulness in a healthcare setting. And I was quite intrigued by it. So, and that's the reason why I signed up.
Right. I think there's this perception that if done right, practicing mindfulness can lead to a very visible and obvious transformation. Is that the case, or are the effects a lot more nuanced?
I think the biggest takeaway for me is it helped me understand my mind better. So, for example, if I'm like triggered, like if somebody makes me upset, I understand that it can be a biochemistry reaction within my body, right? Anxiety can cause my body to react in a certain way. So, but now I understand I have a choice how I want to respond to that anxiety or that feeling of being upset. So I think it's that realization about that anxiety doesn't have to be my identity. Of course, I'm still grumpy, but at least the awareness is there, and I'm able to now also sit more with uncertainty and anxiety, meaning I can accept that I don't have to know all the answers. And it's really useful when you go on air because sometimes there's just so many things that can happen or go wrong. But now I'm able to kind of like just go with the flow better. And I think that has been that biggest takeaway. And also, I was having a lot of this chatter in my mind. It was chatting in my mind. It was kind of noisy. And after being, doing few rounds of meditation, even going for retreats. My last retreat was in November in Japan. It's a Soto Zen retreat. So going for retreats and practicing mindfulness has helped reduce that chatter.
So based on the article we looked at, we've been thinking and talking about the possibility of mindfulness eventually being prescribed as a medical treatment. Can you talk to us about why it might actually make for a good form of treatment for certain conditions?
So the mind and body is connected, and there are numerous studies out there to show how the mind and body is connected, and they've sort of proven it. So say if some troubling emotions arise, the amygdala in the brain gets triggered, and following that, you know, your sympathetic nervous system also gets triggered, which then increases your heartbeat and increases your blood pressure, and it affects your digestion of food because you get into this fight or flight or even freeze mode. And so when your body is in that state of anxiety, that state of heightened blood pressure, you can imagine that it's not a very healthy state to be in, right? So when your blood pressure is not normal, it means that it will affect the functioning of some of your hormones. It might affect the functioning of your organs and cells and so forth. So it will have some damage on your physical health. And over long term and done frequently enough to your body, it will obviously leave some damage. And that's why there's been links to cancer, for example, why cancer happens. So the idea of mindfulness is to keep a steady mind, is to learn to cultivate that steady mind in order for your body to also to be in that state of optimal state, to perform optimally, so that well, you can sleep better, for example. You are likely to have longer health. And also, you're likely to have better health. And there are also studies now to show that the practice of mindfulness can help reduce the risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. But of course, the practice has to be done over quite a long term.
Right. And do you think that it would be feasible to prescribe mindfulness in the same way you would prescribe a pill or a kind of medication?
Yes and no. So, for example, in MBCT, the people who can join the class should ideally not be seeking psychological help at that point in time. The reason for this is that the patient should not have too many treatments going on. It's better to have to be seeing one expert, like a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and get and do all the necessary work and go through all that treatment, and then take a break for 6 months, and then embark on a mindfulness program if they wish to do so. And also, people with diabetes, they should also inform their doctor, because the practice of mindfulness, when you do meditation, breathing practices, it reduces your blood pressure. It can have some impact on your glucose. So I would say there are some criteria who should actually do mindfulness. And so a properly trained mindfulness facilitator is also able to look out for any signs that some people are feeling very uncomfortable, say, doing some of the breathing practices. For example, someone who's maybe gone through a very traumatic experience, they might not be able to sit through a whole 40-minute breathing practice, and practice has to be shortened for them, or a different kind of practice is needed. So these are things that the facilitator, a properly trained one, needs to look out for. And so someone who is also going through a lot of stress, like maybe someone, a loved one had passed away recently, it's also best to kind of like just go through the bereavement process first and then only get onto the mindfulness course. I know it might sound a bit ironic, right, because mindfulness is meant to help you deal with depression, anxiety, stress and so forth. But the idea is that that you should, you know, have some space for yourself first to grieve, for example, or to see your psychologist and finish your treatment before you embark on a different kind of treatment.
So, you know, it does sound and seem like there are lots of variables that can impact how effective mindfulness would be from person to person. So as the industry grows, how do you ensure that there is a level of consistency in terms of the practitioners?
Okay, so there are many schools teaching mindfulness, ironically in the US and UK. So different schools have different treatments or different programs and different standards. But I would say MBCT by University of Oxford and MBSR by Massachusetts and a few other schools, they are very reputable and I think they have quite high standards. So teachers should get properly trained. And because there is a standard to be achieved, one, you have to have your own practice, and two, you have to embody certain values. And therefore, it is for the teachers, it's also a journey for themselves. I did the teacher training, apart from, you know, wanting to have that skill to teach, was also for myself to become even more mindful. So in that sense, there is a certain standard to be achieved as a mindfulness teacher. But it's a different standard from, say, law or accountancy where, you know, it's exam-based, right? For mindfulness, it's like, do you even embody the values of kindness, patience, being non-judgmental? So as an industry, as a result, the industry may grow big, but then what it means, there may be a variation in quality.
Right. And why isn't mindfulness as recognized as a form of treatment compared to, say, psychology or psychiatry?
There are a few things at play. When people need help, sometimes it's easier to just see a psychologist and just get the treatment, or see a psychiatrist, just get a drug, and, you know, that's it, it's done. Mindfulness is a practice. You need to practice it, so there's no shortcut. But the outcome, mindfulness allows you to practice self-care, and it's a much cheaper way than going for drugs. But having said that, if anyone feels there's something amiss about themselves, like they're struggling with something mentally, it's still wise to always see a psychologist or a psychiatrist as the first point of contact and not a mindfulness teacher.
And how do you see the mindfulness industry evolving in the future? I mean, do you think it will become more mainstream going forward?
Yeah, so when I run some workshops, a lot of people do ask me, oh, how do they even get trained themselves, right? Or how do they, go for mindfulness training or go attend a mindfulness program? I think there's definitely a lot of interest because, you know, mental health issues are on the rise, and these are things like stress, daily stress. It doesn't even have to be something serious, right? So yeah, so I think I'm quite positive of the development in Malaysia, for sure. Singapore is also very popular, mindfulness. For the teacher training program, about maybe 80% of my classmates in Oxford were psychologists and psychiatry. In terms of attendees, like people just wanting to learn about mindfulness, there's quite a big range. Like, for example, I've done a workshop for cancer survivors. I've done a workshop for doctors. And I've done a few workshops for business owners. So usually I think people who are, you know, who have experienced or are experiencing some stress, and usually these kind of professions or you know, people who may be recovering from a major illness. Oh, I wanted to add, the National Health Service in NHS in England accepts NDCT as a treatment for depression. So that's why a lot of my classmates will be doctors with NHS. Because, you know, the cost of drugs are so expensive, and they're noticing people were dropping out of the treatment because either they just didn't want to spend the money on drugs, and so all the drugs were not effective. So that's why they're putting mindfulness as an alternative.
Noelle, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. You just heard from our very own Noelle Lim, presenter and producer at BFM's Morning Run, talking about her recent foray into the world of teaching mindfulness. And this is something that we wanted to explore because it's being taken increasingly seriously. And we want to know whether or not it's something that you also practice, whether it's something that you would pay to learn how to practice. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on the line with us is George. George, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, guys. I would like to say that, you know, we can be very technical about this in the sense that you can go to workshops and all that. But what is one of the most...
George? George, hi, are you there? Sorry, George, I think the line, well, not I think, the line there really failed us. If you can call us back, we'd love to hear from you. If anyone else wants to weigh in as well, call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we have some WhatsApps. First, this from Suki.
I think mindfulness is the cure to almost everything, if not a lot of things. Imagine Donald Trump practicing mindfulness.
Indeed. but, you know, I do think that mindfulness is an important quality, in no small part because we, you know, we spoke a little bit, was it last week or this week, about the issue of attention residue, about what happens when, you know, our attention gets parceled out into a tiny little pieces all day because we have a tiny, you know, 1,000 tiny tasks to accomplish. And I think in that sense, where you're constantly switched on, mindfulness becomes more important than ever because I think so many of us, or at least maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, so many of us always feel like we're on the verge of dropping one plate and then dropping all the plates that you're juggling, and before you know it, you're just standing among shards of ceramic with bloody feet. I'm sorry, that got really dark, but so that's how it feels.
yeah, it does. And I think right now, because that's what we're expected to do in the workplace, even at home, right, to be able to sort of balance many different things at the same time. And multitasking is seen as a skill that you have to have, otherwise you will lose out. But, you know, I think we're sort of pivoting to this place where it's perhaps more productive to be doing one thing at a time as opposed to multiple things at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we also have Sylvester, who says, I have a daily meditation practice for about 3 years. As far as I'm concerned, there's no one-size-fits-all approach. It also depends on the receptiveness plus other things of an individual. The bottom line is, you can't force a cow to drink if it doesn't want to. People want instant gratification, and this is a really long and slow process to see if there are any benefits at all. The whole ecosystem of capitalized mindfulness makes me wonder, though, is there anything that humans aren't able to make money out of?
Oh, yeah. And I think that might be part of the discomfort with wellness being an industry on its own like that.
Yeah,
right?
For
because
sure.
So many you can earn so much profits from it. But at the same time, you're like, wait, is this self-care? Can I participate in self-care without participating in the same sort of system that is causing me to be this distraught? Right. But on that note, on the earlier point that Sylvester made as well, I think it's also the fact that whether whether or not, and I think that's why scientists in the medical field are struggling to sort of quantify that, because it's so diverse in practice.
Now on the line with us is Siva. Siva, good evening. We've lost Siva. We're not having the best of luck with our line today. If you'd like to weigh in, do call us. That number is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Again, we're talking today about the practice of mindfulness, how it can be beneficial, but also how there is increasingly this sort of ecosystem that's bubbling up around it. We see workshops coming, we see brands and apps selling it to us. Is that something that you want to participate in? You can call us 7733 2900 to weigh in. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, just before we get to our next guest, because we do have two, we heard earlier from Noelle Lim, we do have a WhatsApp here from Dr. Kyrie Khalil, who wants to know, could you help just briefly mention in one or two sentences what mindfulness is? It sounds very interesting.
So based on how the New York Times article would describe it, it's usually described as the practice of paying attention to your present experience without judging it. Sometimes, but not always, through techniques like meditation. And I think there are various ways to practice it. And because of that, there are also various definitions.
Yeah, I think it's just having a keener understanding and awareness of what you're doing and how you're feeling and what you're thinking, right? Because so many of us run on autopilot throughout the day. If you think about just all the things that you do in the course of a day, and you consider how much of that is done on autopilot without actually noticing how you're feeling and what you're doing, then I think the counterpoint to that would be mindfulness, or at least that's how I understand it. I, however, am no expert. So we are going to be speaking to somebody who is on the line with us. Is Dr. Joel Low, because we wanted to get the perspective of a psychologist. Joel, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys.
So firstly, would you, I guess, not to put you on the spot, but would you agree with our definition of mindfulness? Is that how clinically you would think of it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty spot on. I think what you said earlier on about how we are on autopilot most of the time, right? And that we're not really aware of what's going on in the present. And I think mindfulness is actually a really good counterpoint to that. A really good easy example is like when we eat lunch or dinners nowadays, right? How often is it that we are talking to someone, or we're on the phone or on Facebook or watching a show or whatever it is, right? Mm. And we're just mindlessly shoving food into our mouths and that sense, right? And we don't really taste our foods or actually appreciate our foods, right? So that's a really good example of how busy we are on a day-to-day basis. And mindfulness is a good way to calm us down and slow us down and say, hey, what's up? What's going on right now, right?
As a form of treatment, how does practicing mindfulness differ from, say, seeking therapy or psychological help?
In my practice, my own practice, I use it as a supplement to therapy, right? So, like, for example, I do something called cognitive behavior therapy. And with CBT, what usually happens is that we say that our thoughts are what governs the way we feel, the way we think, the actions that we do in that sense, right? And sometimes we have to remind ourselves that our thoughts are our own, in the sense that we are able to control it, we can manipulate it, and we can think whatever we want to think, right? But that isn't to say that we are not going to have bad thoughts when bad things happen. So, like, again, this minor car accident, for example, or if I go through a bad breakup, I'm going to have really, really bad thoughts, right? So while CBT tells us that we can manipulate those thoughts and tell ourselves, look, I don't have to be upset or don't be down, it's easier said than done sometimes, right? So to supplement my therapy, what I do is I ask them to do practice mindfulness, right? And I get them to say that, you know, it's okay to feel bad, it's okay to feel down, but right now, let's focus on the here and now, all right? What are you doing right now? How's your body feeling right now? And it's a good form of distraction and a good way to relax the body and mind.
So there are mindfulness programs and workshops out there. Do you see this as something that could or should be prescribed by a health professional in order to supplement what's going on, or just, you know, to address certain issues for somebody?
I think the workshops and trainings are really good. But I think with any skill that you learn, it's really the intentionality behind on why and how you do it, like, in that sense, right? So like with mindfulness, anyone can practice mindfulness, right? You can go online and download an app for your phone, and they can teach you mindfulness in 5 minutes, right? So I think there's nothing wrong with going for those workshops and trainings. I think the only concern is when people start using it as a be-all and end-all of treatment or mental health, for example, right? I've heard people say that, oh, just, you don't worry about being depressed or anxious. As long as you're mindful, you'll be fine, you'll be cured, you'll be treated from all those kind of disorders. I think that's when the concern comes, right? I think mindfulness is really effective and good at helping people feel better and do better. But at the same time, if it's used willy-nilly and not done by a clinician when you're treating someone with depression or anxiety, for example, then it can get a bit hairy, right? But I think as a skill, everyone should learn it. I think it's really good, it's really powerful, and it's really effective as well. Just don't use it for treatment if you're not able to.
And where do you see the mindfulness industry going?
It's blowing up, isn't it? Like, I mean, there's programs and training centers all over the place. People are selling it online, or and they do mindfulness studios nowadays and all that kind of things, right? So I think it's a commodity that's growing. I think more and more people are going to want to have access to it, and it's going to be one of those, hipster treatment methods or hipster lifestyle kind of practices, right? So I think it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, which is no bad thing, right? I think the main issue is about how we use it effectively to make sure that we make the best out of it.
Joel, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
That was psychologist Dr. Joel Low weighing in on mindfulness and how it, I guess, mixes with different fields that are all aimed at addressing kind of mental health and the stresses and tensions of daily life in many ways. So we've been talking about the practice of mindfulness, and we want to know if that's something that you do. But we also want to hear from you about whether or not you would actually pay to get these benefits. Would you participate in a workshop, pay a monthly subscription for an app, you know, anything of that sort? Call us and let us know at 7733 2900. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.